All right. So welcome everybody and good morning. Thank you for taking the time to join us today for the DWC Healthcare Provider Quarterly Meeting. We appreciate your time and this opportunity for us to give y'all a chance to see what we're working on and looking at and get your feedback as well as any questions you may have. So I'm gonna move to our agenda. Can y'all see that? Perfect. All right. So we got a quick look at the topics that we'll be covering today, and then we will be closing things out with Commissioner Nelson. But before we begin, as a reminder, please stay muted during the presentation so everyone can hear our speakers as best as possible. And I know we get some questions posted to the chat. So myself or another DWC staff member will try to answer those as best we can, but I'm also running the presentation today. So please bear with me if I'm a little slow on the chat. That's definitely testing those multitasking skills for me. So just please be patient with me, bear with me. We will of course also have time allotted at the end for any questions. So let's go ahead and get started. And we are going to kick things off with our compliance and investigations update from our Deputy Commissioner, Deborah Knight.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for being here. And let's go ahead and go to the next slide. Sorry.
Yeah.
That's me. Next slide. Okay. So I'll go ahead and start off just kind of summarizing my area, just in case anybody's new here. So it is the compliance and investigations area, and it consists of our audits and investigations, and the administrative enforcement, the fraud investigations, and the DA fraud prosecutions unit. So those three units. So we'll go over some data about those three units. First is the audits investigations, and they investigate allegations of administrative violations, complaints in the system. So let's look at our, calendar year 2023 complaints. Next slide. So this is, we have consistently kind of separated these complaints out by the type of complaint that was received, just to keep to look at if we're seeing any jumps. These are consistent. These are the types of complaints that we received. So far in calendar year 2023, we've received 858 complaints. And the majority of those are communications bucket. So it's about communications, complaints about whether carriers, communications, healthcare providers, communications back and forth. So those are our big ones. We've closed 969 complaints. Of those 969 that were closed, 365 of those are confirmed. And what confirmed means is they were investigated and the investigations unit determined that the complaint was confirmed violation, and then they refer that to enforcement from that point. 181 of those were an education letter, and basically what education letter means is we are statutorily required to prioritize our investigations based on the risk of the type of violation that's being alleged. And sometimes some of those alleged violations are an education letter is sent out letting the person who's been complained about know what their obligations are in the system. And then of the 969, we've had 423 of those were not confirmed. So opposite of confirmed, but they were investigated and it was determined that the allegations and that the evidence did not support a violation. Next slide. So just a little bit, digging a little bit further down into the types of complaints and investigations that are done of administrative violations based on the type and who was responded type, who was complained about. So the type of complaint about attendance, we have those are injured employees, but let's just look at the bigger numbers. So indemnity benefits, not surprisingly, that is tends to be something that we receive a lot of complaints about. And the respondent for those, of course, is the insurance carrier. So 225 of the complaints on indemnity benefits were obviously against the insurance carrier. Next slide. Okay, so since this is healthcare, let's talk about the PBO. I know some of y'all are probably undergoing PBO right now, so I'll give you a status of that. Next slide. So next steps is that the preliminary findings will be provided on both of the PBO measures of review of the 73s and the 69 categories. They'll be provided in August of 2023, so just around the corner. After that, there's a chance for responses to reply to those preliminary findings, and those will be due in September. When you're sent out your preliminary findings, it'll give you all the information about how to submit a response. And after that, finally, the results will be published in December 2023. Next slide. So if you have any questions about the 2023 PBO, look at the measures can be found at this website, or you can obviously ask the question at the pbo@tdi.texas.gov. Next slide. So next area is the DWC Fraud and Prosecutions Unit. So let's talk about their numbers. For FY 2023, I know I go back and forth between calendar year and FY. It's just really depending on what the data is and what we've historically, how we reported it. But for FY 2023, the fraud unit had 1,077 referrals. And so what that means is there have been allegations of fraud have been submitted, and 1,077 of those have been submitted. Of those, we've opened 45 fraud cases. 52 have been closed during that time period. And not of the 1,077, let me correct that. We currently have 45 open cases, and we've closed 52 of those, and we've made 3 fraud referrals for prosecution. Next slide. And for the prosecutions, we've had 6 convictions over this FY. 2 of those were employers. Our employer fraud schemes normally involve premium fraud. Those consist of either a employer miscategorizing their employees. Example of, you say you have a bunch of administrative staff and what you have is tree climbers, or underreporting payroll. We have 2 injured employees were convicted. Those are usually working and drawing type schemes. Just to step a little bit further back here, just because an employee, an injured employee is working, doesn't mean they've committed fraud against the system. But if they are collecting money and not haven't reported to the carrier that they are that they have a job, then and so the carrier can reduce that pay, and that is maybe fraud. They have to have known, because we're talking about criminal fraud here. So they have to have an intentional act, and they have to know what the requirements are. We've had 1 healthcare provider, and those schemes are healthcare provider generally or the billing for care that hasn't been provided. And we've had 1 attorney conviction. Next slide. So the enforcement update. This is the administrative enforcement group. So these are the ones that when the audits investigations confirms a complaint or confirms a violation, they send it over to enforcement. And so let's look at their numbers. So for calendar year 2023, the enforcement case status is we've closed as of this slide, 531. Let me make sure. Yeah, there we go. We've had 369 closed. And we have pending 231 cases. Next slide. The pending by subject type. So let's talk about the subject type. Who is the enforcement action is against? Of those pending, 29 are healthcare providers, and 196 are insurance carriers, and 6 are others. Others are attorneys. And employers, those type of are others in our system. Next slide. So it looks like our closed, and so I do have to emphasize that our closed number is pretty. We're pretty proud of it that we're handling these cases to closure pretty quickly, we've done a lot of work on that. And so I just want to mention that. But let's look at the closed type. 46 of those that are closed were healthcare providers, 305 insurance carriers, and 18 others. So y'all can read those slides. Next slide. Now, digging a little bit about how what happened with those closed cases. So we look at the closed cases for the ones that were closed that resulted in an order, a DWC order. Most of those are consent orders. 215 insurance carrier administrative violation enforcement cases were closed with an order, 15 for healthcare providers and 3 others. You look at warning letters. So let's talk a little bit about warning letters. Warning letters, we send out warning letters if there's a confirmed violation, but in order to get compliance, we think that a warning letter initially is going to get us compliance. Now we've already sent out warning letters for that same thing against that same entity. So we're not going to send a warning letter over and over again because then we're not getting compliance. But warning letters are very useful because a lot of times they will get compliance, but sometimes when we'll have to do an order instead. So we look at these 79 of the closed ones went out with for carriers were a warning letter, and 30 for healthcare providers, 15 other. Okay, next slide. So violations to watch. This is a new slide. So one of the things that I wanted to talk about with this group, or I guess present, but obviously open to questions, is that one of the things that we're really looking at are violations, administrative violation of 408.027 and the administrative code 133.240. What we're looking at is not complying with an air carrier, not timely processing final actions or completed medical bills within the 45 days, not either paying or denying or asking for more information. And other one is 408.0041, which is requires an insurance carrier to reimburse DDs for examinations ordered by DWC. So these are orders, and you know, DDs are very important in our system, and they play a very important role, and they need to get paid, right? And they need to get paid within the time frame. And there's an order. And so if non-compliance with those orders would be a significant issue in our program and in the system. And so we're looking at those violations. And if it's an accident once, maybe, but then we have that warning letter. But these are orders. So we're looking at those. They're not, a DD exam doesn't require pre-authorization. And so non-compliance with that is something that we're looking at strongly. Next slide. Another thing I want to talk about is just to look at, if you want to see any of our disciplinary orders, they're all published online, and this is where you can go get them. Next slide. And so that concludes my presentation. Does anybody have any questions? I know we're going to have some time at the end too. So,
hey, Deborah, there was one question in the chat. If we file a complaint against an insurance company and they don't respond to your office, DWC at all, what happens then?
If a complaint is filed and they don't respond, we don't usually have people who don't respond. We can order a response, and then if they do not, we can order them you get a complaint, we get a complaint in, we'll look at that complaint, we'll see if it alleges a violation, and if it alleges a violation, then we'll investigate it. And what we'll send out the usually a document request from the carrier so we can do an investigation. If they don't respond to that document request, then our next step is to order a response. And if they don't respond to that order, not complying with an order in itself is a violation. So then we'll start an administrative action for that violation, which is confirmed. That's easy. We send it out and you didn't respond. We gave you a time frame and you didn't respond. And we will usually get, I have yet to not get a response from a carrier once we, sometimes it has to be elevated, right? So when it gets elevated, the right person isn't looking at it when it's just, when they think they just got a complaint in. But we, in rare instances, we do have to order a response and then we start that violation.
Thank you.
Okay, if there are any questions right now, then I'll go ahead and turn it over to Mary Landrum.
Thank you, Deborah. So good morning, everybody. I am going to give you a brief update on few rural projects under my program area. and also discuss an important bill that was signed by the governor here recently. I will then turn it over to Chi-Chi, our new Director of Healthcare Business Management, for an OMA update. You may recall that I had mentioned having hired her at the last quarterly meeting. Chi-Chi will then turn it over to Santiago Calderon, who is the Director for Designated Doctor Operations, and he will provide a Designated Doctor Program update. So let's get started on my update. A formal proposal on teledentistry is out for comment with a comment period ending July 28th. The amendments proposed conform Section 13330 to Texas Occupations Code, Chapter 111, which the legislature amended under House Bill 2056 to define teledentistry dental service. So it's really just to conform to that, that House bill that passed. The next rule that I want to talk to you about, it's a formal proposal on the MQRP rules, which is also out for comment until 7/17. The proposed amendments for this rule conform with related rules and practices and clarify certain aspects of the informal settlement process, or ISC as we refer to it. As part of this rule project, we are also proposing amendments to the medical quality review process. And this process is really our procedure on how to investigate complaints, how we carry out audits. And this is out of the Office of the Medical Advisor. The deadline for the to submit comments on the process is July 17th. But not to scare you, in case you go out there and look at the document, do note that there's a lot of red line to the document. Most of the edits to this document are editorial in nature for plain language and agency style. But because of the many editorial edits, we did put a side-by-side comparison for an easier review on your end. We are also finalizing the third informal proposal on designated doctor billing and reimbursement. You may be aware that House Bill 2702 related to designated doctor payments to include a no-show fee did not pass this last session. We were monitoring the bill that obviously did not pass, just keeping an eye to see how we needed to make amendments to our third informal. So keep an eye on your email so that when the informal proposal is announced, you'll be ready to do that review and provide comments. So lastly, I want to talk about Senate Bill 1122 relating to the exclusion of certain medical services to determine an appropriate level of workers' comp benefits from sales and use tax sales. That bill did pass. And we're very excited about this rule because what this means is that designated doctors' exams are not taxable. So DDs should not bill for sales tax and carriers should not pay for sales tax. I know this created some concern, not just internally, but externally to the designated doctor community. So I just wanted to make sure to mention that bill did in fact pass. And so with that, I am going to turn it over to Chi-Chi.
All right, thank you, Mary. Good morning, everyone. My name is Chi-Chi Onorobi, the new Director for Healthcare Business Management. And I report to Mary Landrum, and I've been in this role since March of this year. And so far, I'm having fun. All right, okay, next slide. Okay, quality of care complaints. For this calendar year 2023, the Office of the Medical Advisor, OMA, has received 65 complaints related to the standard and quality of care received, and of which some have been fully investigated while others are still going through the review process. 48 complaints have been closed this year, this calendar year. Note that not all 48 complaints were received in this calendar year. 48% of these, OMA didn't find non-compliance issues with the complaint. 23%, OMA sent the subject an education letter. 8% complaints continue with the medical review, quality review process to be reviewed by the members of the medical quality review panel, which is the MQRP members, to determine if there are any non-compliance issues. then 21% of the complaints were referred to enforcement for further actions. Next slide, please. This is the medical quality review. This slide shows the work done by the MQRP members. It shows the number of quality reviews initiated where we assign cases to the MQRP members to determine if there are any non-compliance issues. So as you see in this period, 10 reviews were initiated. Some are part of the return to work audit and others are complaint based. OMA concluded the review of 22 cases where 23% of these were sent to enforcement for further review and 77% were closed with other actions. So before I go to the next slide, I want to share a bit about OMA audits. The first one is return to work audit. An important goal of the Texas Workers' Compensation System is to return injured employees to safe and productive environment. The purpose of this audit is to promote the delivery of healthcare, quality healthcare in a cost-effective manner, including protecting the safety of injured employees, ensure that doctors' decision and record keeping regarding return to work were reasonable, and support the return to work outcomes and avoid unnecessary disability. So the Office of the Medical Advisor is preparing to send our preliminary findings to the subjects. Then the second audit is a spinal cord stimulator audit. So the spinal cord stimulator audit was proposed on the 31st of May, seeking input for the audit plan. The comment period ended June the 14th, and we received about 9 comments so far. Dr. Owen, our medical advisor, is looking into these comments for any edits to the plan. And the third audit is the gabapentin pregabalin audit, pregabalin with opioid audit. Preparation work have been started on this audit plan. We kicked off our work looking at the use of gabapentin pregabalin with the use of opioid medication. The purpose of this audit is to review the appropriate use of a healthcare provider's decision-making and record-keeping that supports prescribing gabapentin, pregabalin with the combination of opioid for each treatment plan tailored to a specific injured employee and support return to work outcomes and also improve the quality of life. Slide 3, please, Kate. As stated by Deborah earlier, OMA has begun the PBU assessment for healthcare providers. A reminder, the Office of the Medical Advisor assists in the healthcare provider PBU assessment by having the MQRP members review the DWC 73 forms in which box C was marked, taking injured employees off work. The assessment is to determine whether the reason of the DWC 73 form and documentation supports taking injured employees off work. This year, MQRP members will review 584 DWC 73 forms. For now, 584 assessments were received, none has been initiated, and none have been concluded. We expect to have these tasks concluded and completed in the next few months. Next slide, please. As for enforcement referrals, here's what OMA has done as well as enforcement on OMA cases. OMA referred 10 cases to enforcement. Enforcement closed one case with a consent order. 29 cases are still pending in enforcement, and there are 3 cases pending in SOAR. I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have. And if I don't have answers, I have Mary on the line who can help answer as well. So this is all I have. I will turn it over to San Diego, Director of Designated Directors Operation. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Chichi.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Santiago Calderon, Director of Designated Doctor Operations. I'll be covering Designated Doctor Program updates. Next slide, please. We're going to get started with the Designated Doctor homepage. I invite you to look at the resources and videos on the Designated Doctor homepage. From this page, you can access the updated rule language, past presentations of recent changes, new forms, and videos about recent changes to Form 32 and how to complete the Form 32. For the parties that request designated doctor exams, I encourage you to pay special attention to the video on how to complete the Form 32. Please follow the links provided to learn more about the additional resources and videos. Next slide, please. Amendments to Rule 127 and 180.23 became effective on April 30th and June 5th of this year. As of April 30th, any doctor who passed a test at least once since May 13th of 2013 is no longer required to take the certification test every 2 years. DDs and other certifying doctors must still take required certification training every 2 years. As you may have guessed, we've been busy processing applications. From January through April of this year, we received 55 applications. Since April 30th, a total of 95 applications have been received. We received 55 applications in May, of which 27 were new applications. Of the 27, 13 are from physicians. So far in June, we've received 40 applications. Of the 40, 27 are new. Of the 27, 7 are from physicians. As of June 5th, DWC expanded DD qualifications to address traumatic brain injuries, TBI. The original board specialties of neurological surgery, neurology, physical medicine and rehab, and psychiatry remain. This amendment added approximately 55 physicians now qualified to examine TBI injuries. For a complete list of the new board specialties, please visit the DD homepage where you'll find the adoption order. You'll want to reference rule section 127.130. Also, as of 6.5, for any new ordered DD exam, DDs will only complete multiple certifications of MMI and IR when ordered by DWC through a presiding officer's directive, also known as a POD. Next slide, please. So what else is new? Well, in this slide, we're going to cover examples of the new section of the commissioner's order for DD exams. The new order contains the carrier billing information. Here, someone will find the insurance carrier name, mailing address, phone and fax number, and an email contact address. If DWC does not have carrier billing information, please look at the second example, then the order will have instructions to call the 1-800 number. So what's important about this? Well, for our healthcare providers out there, we want you to pay particular attention to the billing section of the order. That'll be on the second to last page of the new order. You'll want to refer to the information in the order versus what you may see on any old 32s that you might receive with a commissioner's order. The rule was just recently adopted. So for the next couple of weeks, you will be seeing the old 32 as we phase that one out and we start seeing the new 32. But again, please refer to the billing section on the order. Next slide, please. Okay, so two revised forms became effective on June 5th. You may visit the DD homepage to obtain a copy of the Form 32 or the Form 68. If you need an unlocked copy of the Form 32 to load into your system, you should contact the web staff at webstaff@tdi.texas.gov. Again, web staff, all is one word, @tdi.texas.gov. DWC will not approve any language changes to the form. Changes to Form 68 were minimal and included style changes. The Form 67 became effective on April 30th. That's the form that you're going to want to use when you apply for certification to become a designated doctor. I am now turning it over to the hearings regional director of the Northern and Western Regions, Jerry Lynn Thomas.
Good morning. My name is Jerry Thomas. I'm the regional director of hearings for the Northwestern region. Next slide, please. As you heard with Santiago, the designated doctor rules were updated. The new rules restrict multiple certifications to only when ordered by DWIC. The new DWIC 32 no longer has boxes that ask folks to list all injuries accepted as compensable by the insurance carrier, which was box 37, or to list all injuries determined to be compensable by an approved DWIC Form 24, DWIC decision and order, DWIC appeals panel decision, or final court order if applicable. That was box 38. However, box 32 was added to the DWIC 32, which asked essentially the same things. Has there been an approved DWIC Form 24, benefit dispute agreement, final DWIC decision, or final court order to determine the compensable injury? Next slide, please. The new rules prompted changes to our procedures and hearings. The new rules state, as Santiago indicated, that for designated doctor examinations after June 5th, 2023, the designated doctor may provide multiple certifications only when directed by the division. What this means is that prior to the dispute resolution process, most disputes will not have multiple certifications based on the disputed conditions. Next slide, please. In response to the new rules, we developed a new process and hearings. To start, DWIC will review all disputes received in hearings with the following issues: extent of injury, maximum medical improvement, and impairment rating. These are the types of disputes that typically will require multiple certifications from a designated doctor, so we'll work with the parties to see if additional assistance is needed. Next slide, please. In order to assist the parties to see if multiple certifications are needed from the designated doctor, we created the Benefit Review Officer 1, or the BRO 1 position, and this is a new position. The BRO 1 will contact the parties for a list of accepted and disputed conditions. This includes calls to the parties and sending written requests for information to the parties. The considerations for success include that the parties must know the accepted and disputed conditions early in the dispute so they can communicate this to the BRO 1. The BRO 1 will reach out and help the parties to identify the conditions, and they will work to facilitate an agreement on extent of injury if possible. We encourage folks to really interact with the BRO 1s because their entire purpose is to assist the parties in obtaining certifications that are meaningful in dispute resolution. In addition, the BRO 1s will act as a single point of contact in these cases to allow for continuity of communication between the parties. Next slide, please. Once the information is received, the BRO 1s will issue a presiding officer directive to the designated doctor. Again, that's the POD. The types of contact between the BRO 1 and the designated doctor will include requests for clarification or requests for an exam and multiple certifications. However, specific instructions for the DD will be contained within the directive or the letter of clarification. And the BRO 1s are trained to follow up with the designated doctor's office or the parties well in advance of the scheduled BRC. Our goal is to review all maximum medical improvement, impairment rating, and extent of injury to 45s, contact the parties and identify the accepted and disputed conditions, order that designated doctor exam if needed, and obtain the necessary certifications before the BRC. Next slide, please. This process will be beneficial for the parties. However, it's expected to add 15 to 20 days to the number of days for dispute resolution. Therefore, we're asking for assistance from all system participants to improve timeliness of dispute resolution. Essentially, we're looking for, want folks to brainstorm on ways to reduce continuances and reduce last minute motions. We do have brown bag seminars scheduled hopefully shortly, so we can interact with folks more frequently and get your input on what is working and look at additional options. The brown bag seminars provide us with a great opportunity to discuss new ideas and allow us to get more input from system participants. And I think we had a few questions. Let's see if I can see the chat. Oh, no, that's Mary. That's all I have. I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Donovan. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Good morning, everyone. This quarter, I'm going to start off with the research and evaluation group update, then the legislative update, and then I'll end with a communications update. So the research and evaluation group has been busy working on several reports. Next slide, please. We re-released the 2022 employer participation in the Texas Workers' Compensation System report in April. This is a snapshot from that report. Both the snapshot and the full report are available on our website. Some of the key findings are that the employer subscription rate for the private sector employers increased to 75% in 2022 from 72% in 2018. The share of private sector employees working for subscribers increased to 83%, which is the highest in 12 years. The industry with the largest subscription rates is mining, utilities, and construction. The subscription rates among small employers decreased while staying stable for large employers. The most common reason for non-subscribers saying that they did not have workers' compensation coverage was due to having too few employees. And then 30% of the non-subscriber employers provided occupational benefit plans in 22, and that percentage has been relatively stable since 2012. And then 73% of the non-subscriber employees are covered by an occupational benefit plan in 2022. Just as a reminder, the alternative occupational benefit plans are benefit plans developed by non-subscribers that pay medical, wage replacement, or other type of benefits to employees injured on the job. These plans are not regulated by the Division of Workers' Compensation. Next slide, please. The Research and Evaluation Group also released the final COVID-19 fact sheet earlier this month, and it is also available on our website. As a reminder, DWC's data call will not be extended and the report won't be updated based on the low number of new COVID-19 claims. We anticipate that the current trends will remain consistent moving forward. And please be on the lookout for our return to work report, which will be released soon. We also anticipate releasing health cost and utilization report, access to care report, and pharmacy closed formulary report this coming quarter. The reg will also be proposing their 2024 research agenda for next year as well. Next slide, please. For the legislative update, I mentioned last quarter, there were a record number of bills filed this session. It was an extremely busy session for workers' compensation. Next slide. While it was a busy session, a lot of workers' compensation bills did not pass or were vetoed. I'm going to provide a brief legislative update about some key workers' compensation bills that have been enacted into law from this session. I know this is going to be a lot of information. Like prior sessions, we will be putting out a memo about the key bills in July. The first is Senate Bill 1122, which was our legislative recommendation that, as Mary mentioned, we're very happy that did pass. So I won't go into the details of that. Also, as with the previous couple of sessions, a key topic of interest was first responder benefits, where I believe there were 17 total bills dealing with first responders or Texas military forces. Workers' compensation bills were filed, but only a few ultimately wound up passing. House Bill 90, which concerns Texas military forces, expands Texas Government Code Chapter 615, which is death benefits to eligible survivors of a member of the Texas military forces who is on state active duty. These benefits are paid out by the Employees Retirement System of Texas, or ERS. They are not workers' compensation benefit. That said, if the survivors are entitled to this benefit by ERS, it has no bearing on if their workers' compensation is compensable. The eligible survivors can collect both. It also adds travel of Texas military forces to or from duty location to be in the course of scope of employment, and it expands coverage for post-traumatic stress disorder to include members of the Texas military forces on state active duty, and also includes members of Texas military forces on active duty to receive expedited medical benefits for serious bodily injuries as defined by Texas Penal Code 107. One of the more significant changes to the system is House Bill 2468. This law amends and expands lifetime income benefits for first responders and now provides a review process of continued entitlement to these benefits. It also addresses outdated terminology by updating the definition of incurable insanity and imbecility to create new criteria for LIBS eligibility of a major permanent neurocognitive disorder that renders the injured employee permanently unemployable. The review process I mentioned is every 5 years to determine if the injured first responder still meets all requirements for the continuation of LEB's eligibility. The injured first responders must submit to a designated doctor exam to review all LEB's requirements still exist, and this review may suspend or terminate their entitlement to LEB's benefits. In addition to the five-year review, the injured first responder must annually certify that they have not been employed in the previous year. If the insurance carrier provides evidence to the commissioner that the injured first responder certification is not accurate, and the commissioner determines the evidence as sufficient, the insurance carrier may review the employee's entitlement to lifetime income benefits regardless of the date it was last reviewed. This review would also require the injured employee to be examined by a designated doctor to determine continued eligibility for LIPS. This law also expedites the dispute resolution process, including contested case hearings and appeals for first responder LIPS claims if requested by the injured employee. House Bill 3335 amends Labor Code Section 401026 to add peace officer as a defined first responder for purposes of that section when traveling under the course and scope of employment en route to an emergency call. It clarifies that travel to an emergency call places the first responders in the course and scope of employment. House Bill 471, as it was originally filed, made changes to first responder workers' compensation presumption laws that impacted eligibility requirements for benefits such as tobacco usage and timelines for when a heart attack or stroke are presumed to be work-related. Ultimately, the law as passed did not make any amendments to the Workers' Compensation Act. It made changes to employer benefits for first responders under the local government code that provides, for example, salary continuation for up to a year in lieu of workers' compensation benefits. Next slide, please. Some of the other key bills affecting workers' compensation are House Bill 679. This bill amends the Business and Commerce Code with respect to a construction contract or an agreement collateral to a construction contract, that they may not require the contractor to have a specified experience modifier. It also amends the Government Code, Chapter 2252, to state that a government entity may not request or require an experience modifier in a bid, proposal, qualification, offer, or other response submitted as part of the selection process for the award of a contract, or consider an experience modifier in the process of awarding a contract. For those who may not know what an experience modifier it is a simple explanation is that it adjusts an employer's workers' compensation insurance premium based on the employer's claim history and safety record and compares that to the industry in the same state. House Bill 2314 allows a beneficiary to file a workers' compensation claim for death benefits with the insurance carrier or DWC. An insurance carrier must notify DWC and maintain a record of any claim for death they receive. Senate Bill 1659 pushed the Sunset Advisory Commission's review date for the Division of Workers' Compensation, the Office of Injured Employee Counsel, the Texas Department of Insurance, and the Office of Public Insurance Counsel back from 2025 to 2029. There were some other bills not specific to workers' compensation that impact state agency operations that will be implemented, but I figured it wouldn't bore you all with those. Also, as I mentioned, there were a lot of bills that didn't pass or were vetoed. I will go into further detail about bills that didn't pass this year, some that you may see coming back next session, and the implementation process at our 2023 Workers' Compensation Conference next month. Next slide. And this leads me to my communication updates for this quarter. Next slide, please. So if you haven't already, please sign up for our 2023 Texas Workers' Compensation Conference, which is coming up July 10th through the 12th at the Hyatt Regency in Austin. The theme this year is Basics and Beyond. We have 3 days of presentations, And we have something for everyone with over 20 sessions, and you can get up to 11 hours of Texas CLE credit for attorneys. You can get TDI continuing education credit for insurance adjusters, SHRM credit for human resources professionals, and CDMS and CCM credits for rehabilitation providers. Some of the ones, sessions that we've heard the most about that are garnering the most interest so far, and this is for overall, not healthcare provider specific, is the basics of subrogating Texas workers' compensation claims, life of a claim panel, fraud 101 overview, and wage calculation guidelines. We also have a meet the execs panel where we will all be there introducing ourselves in our program areas, and I would love to meet you all in person. So thank you for your time. Are there any questions? Otherwise, I will turn it over to Commissioner Nelson for closing remarks.
All right, thank you, Kim. So I just kind of wanted to reiterate a few things that you heard this morning and go over a few other small items. First, with session, Kim was right. It was a very busy session for workers' comp. And I really wanted to, you know, thank Kim Donovan, Kate Sador, and also Nicole Crossland, who really kind of made up our GR team this session, for keeping track of everything, for making sure everything got done on time. There was a lot to track. There was a lot to do. And a lot of them were put in those positions pretty close to session starting. So they did a great job. And Mary Landrum, she and her program area tracked a lot of bills related to healthcare providers in the workers' comp system. So she had a big part in making this a successful session as well. Kim did mention that our sunset review date got pushed back. And for those of y'all who are a little unfamiliar with that, the sunset review is it's usually about every 10 years where an agency gets reviewed very closely by the legislature to see if any changes need to be made, if that agency is still fulfilling its mission, and in some cases, if that agency even needs to remain an open entity. You know, good and bad, our sunset date did get pushed back 4 years. It's already been pushed back a few times as well. So, you know, in the short term, it's nice because, you know, I don't think anyone likes a huge audit being done to their organization. But on the flip side of that, we've kind of been putting off some things that we were hoping to get done during the sunset process. And I don't think we're going to be able to do that anymore to keep kind of kicking those cans down the road. So in the coming months, probably before the end of the year, we may be coming out with some larger scale projects that we're looking into to possibly trying to get done for next session. So be on the lookout for that. I also did want to reiterate, I know Mary and Kim touched on this, but Senate Bill 1122, the DD sales tax bill, that was a really big issue. You know, we've been working on all these changes to our DD program, and to find out in October that the comptroller had determined that DD exams were subject to a 8.25% sales tax was a big blow. So, you know, again, thank you to Kim and Kate for being able to get that done. I do also want to be clear that while our focus of that was designated doctors, that bill also applies to RME exams as well as all MMI and IR exams. So I think that should be a good thing for the system. That bill is in effect as of June 18th. So that's something we're pretty happy about. Continuing on with our DD program, you know, like I said, we've been working on some rules and some changes to make that program more efficient, to make it more effective, but also to recruit, retain more designated doctors. We have an adequate number of doctors in the system right now, but I think we can improve the system health by bringing more of them in. And that's been a big goal of these rules. With the adoption of the 127 and 180 rules, Santiago went over the numbers, but you know, since May, we have 54 new DD applications, with 20 of those being physicians. So I think those are really great numbers. And that's even before what I kind of look at as a bigger rule, which is our DD fee increase. You know, we've already gone out with two informal proposals. We are looking to go out with another informal proposal sometime in the next few weeks. But it is something we want to continue with. We think it's really the last the last piece of the puzzle to really shoring up our designated doctor program. They haven't had a raise in almost 20 years. We recognize that. We know something needs to be done. So when the informal proposal does come out, I think you're going to see it mirror pretty closely House Bill 2702, which almost passed this session. It didn't quite get there. But I think the legislature was pretty close to what they were looking at. So I think we're going to see something close to that whenever that informal does come out. When it does come out, I mean, the reason we do informal proposals is to get feedback from stakeholders. This is going to be our third one. So please review it. Please let us know what you think. Please provide those comments in writing. It really helps us know what y'all are thinking and to know if we missed the mark on something or if we need to tweak something here or there. So please take a look at that. Along with that, you know, those are improvements to the designated doctor experience. We also know it's important to have good designated doctor reports. I mean, these reports are the linchpin of our system of what benefits an injured employee is entitled to, what payments an insurance carrier is responsible for making, what healthcare benefits they're going to pay for. So it's a very big issue. So we are going to continue with our designated doctor performance reviews. That's something that we are constantly doing. We're looking at designated doctor reports and other actions involving designated doctors. That's going to be something that we continue on with. Really closely, just to close out on a few other things. We took a pause during session on our rulemaking. That doesn't mean we weren't working on rules during that time. We just didn't want to put it out to our stakeholders who had a lot going on just tracking bills this session. But we are going to get things moving now. So, you know, we've got the MQRP rule out for comment, telemedicine out for comment. We're doing this DD informal rule. We've got a few other ones coming. So you're probably going to see a lot of proposals coming out from us in the next few months. And speaking about information coming out from us, you know, one thing I've heard a lot of in the past is that we send out a lot of emails. And I think that's good feedback. I think it's honest feedback. So one thing we are starting to implement, and really just started this month, is a sort of a new DWC weekly digest is what we're looking at. So this is going to be one or two emails a week that includes a lot more information in one email rather than piecemealing all this information, you know, one at a time. I think our stats are showing that that's already getting better traction. So hopefully you all find a little bit more benefit out of that. We're not clogging up your inboxes. Now that's not to say we're not going to send out individual emails when the issue warrants that, but hopefully this does cut down on some of the volume coming from us. Last thing I wanted to pitch was our conference this year. So again, it's in Austin. It's July 10th through the 12th. It's a really good event. It's one of the biggest workers' comp conferences in the country. We already have over 610 people registered, I think, last time I saw. There's a lot of topics for all sorts of people, from healthcare providers to attorneys to adjusters to safety experts. So I think there's something for everyone. And it's a really good opportunity to see people. There's a lot of people who are coming in from all over the state, all over the country. So I think it's a good opportunity to network and just hear what other people are doing. So I would encourage you to do that from our website. And that's really it for me, but I'm happy to answer any questions if anyone has any. All right. Well, we appreciate your time this morning. And if there are topics you want to hear about, you know, please feel free to contact Mary or Chi-Chi or Kate Sidora, who's running this call. We're looking for topics. So if you have something you think we should be discussing, reach out and let us know.
All right. Thank you all. Appreciate it.